Accession number 30418, Mr. Eric Greg Robry, Real Aid. Now, tell me about these educational vocational training courses.
Well, a lot of us, like me, our school courses were disrupted, or we didn't finish them. And it was an extension of what we might have gone on to do at school. You could choose your subjects. Maths, English, geography, history, all the rest of the sort of stuff, economics and all this sort of thing. And there was a proper system on all, well, most camps that I was on, following the same syllabus in these courses. And I was going on these courses that were held on the camps.
At Compton Bassett?
Did them at Compton Bassett, I did them at Kinloss, and I did a little bit on a later place I went to before the mob.
And you've done well on these courses, I presume?
Yes, I ended up, I wasn't demobbed from Kinloss.
So where?
There was another place I went to.
So where's the next place?
First of all, it was Wheaton, near Blackpool.
Wheaton,
W-E-E-T-O-N, small airfield. And I was sent there on another motor mechanics course where they didn't want to know.
So that was 1946 as well?
Yeah.
And what were you doing there?
No, that wasn't 46, sorry, that was 47. I was on a motor mechanics course there, but it didn't do much. Just messing around in the workshop. Nobody was bothered about me. Nobody wanted to know. And I think they sent me there, and a few more air crew as well. They sent me there because it was near the demob centre at Kirkham. And that's what happened. I got my demob number came up. Then I had to do my clearance from Wheaton and go to Kirkham for a couple of days.
And when were you demobilised? 1947, that'll do.
It was 1947. I had 8 weeks demob leave, as they called it, which ended on my birthday, 9th of May. So it's in the book somewhere, I've got it.
Okay. So that would be around about March.
March, yes. It's definitely March. The 23rd of March rings a bell, but I've got it down, if you bear with me.
No, that's fine. Now, so what were you going to do then? You come out to the RAF, it's March 1947. What are you going to do? Because you had got a job at the customs house, I think. That's where you'd worked in Liverpool, wasn't it?
No, we didn't have a job at the customs house.
No, it was at the customs clerk, Dutch Steamship Company.
Yeah.
So what were you going to do?
I came, spent my demob leave at Allerton, most of it, and I got a temporary job there for part of it in the local labour exchange. They employed me for 4 weeks, a temporary civil servant, I suppose I was, on the what they called the exchange of books. It was a time of year when everybody's they had a book with insurance stamps on and the ration books. These had to be exchanged and you got new ones. And it evolved a lot of extra clerical work in the local labour exchanges, and that's what I was doing. And while I was there, we had first view of all the job vacancies that came in. And I'd already applied for entry to training college and been given a date. There's a 2-year waiting list, and I knew I was accepted for teacher training. So I took this temporary job for a month. And while I was there, I came across incoming mail. They were wanting ex-servicemen volunteering for work in Germany on the Control Commission in the PWDP department. That was Prisoners of War and Displaced Persons. And they wanted ex-service personnel to work on interviewing these people or running the displaced person camps. And I was successful in getting an appointment there. They were only yearly appointments. They weren't permanent civil servants. They were temporary civil service appointments. And I was sent to Celle in Germany.
Celle?
Yeah, near Hanover. For the first year. Very interesting.
Now tell us a bit about your work there.
Well, I worked in an office. I was part of the military government, and they had offices in Celle. There were all kinds of people there. So there were some military personnel, army personnel, but most of them control commissions, civil servants. We had a navy blue battle dress uniform, CCG badge. And we were supplying the displaced persons. These are people who'd come into Germany either voluntarily to work or had been forced labour brought into Germany and needed rehabilitating to their own countries. And we worked in conjunction with IRO, the International Relief Organisation, in interviewing these people and seeing if they're suitable for places they applied for, supplying the displaced person camps with all the necessities. That's where these people lived, you know, the different nationalities.
So what about the interviews first? So what were the interviews about? I mean,
well, we were talking in a lot of cases about families. We're also talking about people who were brought into Germany in, under the German forced labour. We're also talking about people who came from the surrounding countries voluntarily to work in Germany. Now, the people who had been forced in, by the time I got to Celle, most of these people had been rehabilitated.
What does that mean?
In their own country. Well, they'd gone back to their own countries, you see.
That could be fatal if it was the Soviet Union.
Yes. But these were people who had been forced into Germany. There weren't many of them from the Soviet Union, but from the Ukraine, Lithuania, Estonia, all these places. They'd been forced to work in Germany, and they were only too pleased to get back. And that's what the IRA were doing. We were more concerned with the people, the hard cases, who didn't want to go back to their own country. The first thing we used to ask them was, why don't you want to go back home? Oh, life's not very good over there, and so on. But they knew, and we knew, that they could have been, you know, badly done to. And there were countries that had, you know, Belgium had a black gold something where they could have gone to Belgium and worked in the coal mines. Naturally, they all wanted to go to America. And we were left with the hard lots who wouldn't go back to their own countries, didn't want to go to the hard working schemes, and it was our job to try and resettle them. I was in the headquarters, so I didn't do much interviewing. My job was, I wasn't the one responsible for it, but I worked going out to DP camps, finding out what if there were any troubles and
what kind of troubles?
Oh, well, some camps were for sole, you know, people from one nationality. A lot of camps were for mixed races, and trouble often broke out between the two factions. Like, we had a crowd of Yugoslavs on one camp up near Hamburg who were Tito's supporters, and another group who were Mihailovic's supporters, the partisans of Yugoslavia. I spent a few months up there, actually. I wasn't at the headquarters. Towards the end of me coming home, I spent up at that camp at near Hamburg. And it was, they were all Yugoslavian types. And then a November night, frosty, dark night, we had a word that there was a trainload of refugees coming in, Yugoslavians, as we were told, and there was a railway siding at the camp, and they were offloaded from their train onto this siding with all their furniture piled up. The camp leader, who was a Yugoslavian, came down to greet them and had sheds, you know, huts set aside for them to live in. And as soon as they found that he was, you were Tito Yugoslav, he was the camp leader, they weren't going in that part of the camp. They wouldn't budge. So we said, well, sorry, you know, there's nowhere else we can go. You find us somewhere else. And he said, well, we can't do it this time of night. You'll have to go there, you know. No. They sat on that siding, bitterly cold November night, frost. All their furniture was unloaded, all their baggage. The train had gone. The next thing, setting fire to their furniture to keep themselves warm. Oh, never seen anything like it. We had some Ukrainians on the camp, and they were always the police. They were always used as police. They came and sorted it out, and we got things settled down. And that's as much as I want to remember about it. There was a very nasty incident, but it would probably take up too much of your time between these two groups. A woman was murdered on the camp just before I came away.
And you don't want to talk about it?
Well, if you've got time, I'll tell you something. Well, as I say, we got them settled after this terrible incident on the railway siding. And things were calm enough for a while. But we managed to get the Mihailovic's mob separate in a separate part of the camp from the Tito lot. But this woman and her husband, they had a young child, baby girl. And I don't know how it happened, but the husband found out that his wife was cohabiting with one of the other side of the Tito's mob in his shack, and couldn't come to terms with this. He'd had trouble with her before, and the Ukrainian police had sorted it out, evidently. But on this particular occasion, she was in a hut with the Mihailovic's bloke, or Tito, I forget which way around it was, with her baby, her young kid, toddler. And he'd gone in, he was beside himself. He'd gone into this hut, found her with him, snatched the kid out of her arms, She ran out of the hut down a long corridor. This fellow, this poor fellow, had found her in this hut with them.
You mentioned that,
yeah. The other one, yeah. Snatched the child out of her arms. She'd flown out, run down the corridor, and instead of running out of the door at the other end, she'd gone into a side room, which was like a broom cupboard. She'd gone in there and tried to lock herself in. And he had managed to force the door open, and we take it that he killed her in there. The first we got to know it, there was myself and one other English bloke in our hut. The CO of our camp, he was on leave. There were just the two of us. And it was fairly late in the evening. I was in my room and I heard this great commotion down the corridor outside, and the cook from the kitchen, this was our block, like, where they did our cooking for us, the cook from the kitchen was flying up. I said, what's the matter? My colleague came out of his room. He says, you've got a gun, haven't you? I had a Mauser sporting rifle. We used to go out shooting deer. He said, get your gun and come with me. I said, what's happened? He says, there's a bloke in the kitchen wielding a knife. So we got the cook quietened down. She'd come and set the alarm. So the pair of us went into the kitchen, and this fellow was standing there with his young daughter in his arm, blood pouring out of his leg, great tear in his trousers, knife in his arm, and jabbering it away in some Slavic language. And then the next thing that happened, the Ukrainian police arrived. The cook had gone up and told them. And he disarmed the bloke, who was pretty rough with him, and got the knife off him. And then gave us the story. He said the chap who'd snatched his child said that he'd gone to get his child away from this other hut, and one of the men in the other hut had stabbed him in the leg, and he'd managed to get the knife from him and chased his wife out, but she'd gone in behind the door and he couldn't get to her. This was his story, evidently. And you know that it wasn't him. Anyway, the Ukrainian police took him to the, we had a little medical centre there, got his leg stitched up, and told us that it was a cotton bull story. He had the knife. He'd gone after his wife and kid, to get his kid, and he'd come out with her and his knife. His wife, he'd chased his wife out. She'd gone into the room. He'd followed her in, stabbed her, and she died behind the door. We went and saw it afterwards. Our liver was lying there. So all the story about the knife was all wrong. And what he'd done, he'd stabbed himself in the leg before he'd run across to our part of the camp. You know, the people in charge where our kitchen was. He'd stabbed himself in the leg, made up this story. And that is really all I know about it, because I was coming away from there.
Back, you came back in 48, didn't
to
you?
To go to college, yeah.
So, just to finish, was that your career teaching? Just sum up, we know how it all finishes.
It wasn't 48, sorry.
49?
I came back 49, April 49, yeah.
So tell me, training and teaching, just sum it up for us so we know how you...
Well, I went to training college at West Yesmond, attached to Newcastle University in Newcastle. It was a 1 year course for, what did they call it again?
Doesn't matter.
It was a sharp course, you know, for people like me whose education, formal education, had been disrupted. And I'd been accepted for the college. So it was a 1 year course, and then we had to do 2 years probation and some more formal college work after that for 2 years. That was in, I started teaching in April 1960, April 49, after my 1 year's college course.
And that was your career?
And that was my career. And then I went on, did extra courses, you know, after that, local ones. English literature course and handicrafts course, just to, for my own good, you know, to top it up, did that for 2 years.
Do you think your wartime experiences had affected you at all?
My wartime experience?
But good or bad?
I did at the time. It did affect me, you know, whether to good or bad. Now looking back, I'll say yes, it was to the good.
In what way?
Well, I had a much more varied existence, life, than I would otherwise have had. Meeting all these different people from different parts of the world, doing different things, having to adapt from one thing to another, being overjoyed sometimes and downhearted the next, but overcoming it, meeting all types of people. And I've often thought, I later heard the expression, let me get it right. Those who can do and those who can't teach. And I thought, well, that's a sort of nasty thing to say. And then I realised what they meant was, I had a lot of experience that I wouldn't otherwise have had to bring into teaching. And people often, I've heard it said myself by teachers who've done the normal course, that teaching, it's school, college, back to school, which is a very narrow thing to do, you know. I'm not saying all teachers don't have any experience. I'm sure most of them do. But there is that way of looking at it. And since I've come back, I thought of all the people I've met and reading all the books about, you know, what we did and what they thought of us. I thought, well, it is a decent experience after all.
Thank you very much.